ComingToBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, September 20th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we finish up the week here on the program. My Super Contest segment will start us off here today. My thoughts for that contest out at the Westgate Superbook in Las Vegas. Also, the Circa Million, part of the contest entries that we have for this year. Going to go ahead and give you my thoughts, the picks that I like for this weekend so far, then also a set of leans that I'm considering to finish out my five-play card. Second half of today's show, Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, will join me for this week's version of the odds report. Lots of sharp money out there in both the college football and the NFL betting markets. Should be a whole lot of fun there to finish out this week on the show. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff being posted over there by our very talented cast of writers. College football and NFL power ratings, the college ones from me, the NFL from Danny Vorgs. We've got a UFC preview for this weekend's card, NASCAR previews for this weekend, and a whole bunch of college football and NFL free picks from myself, Alan Moody, Jonathan Willis, Admir Algic. Lots of great stuff going on over at the website. Make sure that you check it all out. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. At the top of the show here, I do want to remind you that once again, recording my Super Contest picks on the Blog Talk radio channel, and then we have Brent on Skype. So again, the show will sound a little bit different here today, probably going to be that way for the foreseeable future, but we'll be doing the first segment here on our Blog Talk radio channel. I'll do the best I can with the audio, get that up to the same level as the Skype channel, but then that segment with Brent coming up here at the end of the show, like I said, recorded on Skype. So all right, we take a look here at the Westgate Super Contest. 2-3 week for me last week for the Bang the Book podcast entry. 3-2 for our other entry here at bangthebook.com, appropriately named bangthebook.com. 5-5 for me so far here in the Super Contest. 6-4 for our other entry with the first 2 weeks here in the books. As we look back at last week, the field comes in at 56.52%. The Browns, a big help in that department. The Browns were taken by 61.7% of the field. 2,053 entries of the 3,328 took the Cleveland Browns in that Monday Night Football game, and the Browns do wind up covering in pretty comfortable fashion there over the Jets. The Jets were taken by 46 entrants in the Super Contest. So obviously a big difference there. 2,007 more picks on Cleveland than the Jets last week. If you take that Browns game out of the equation, you wind up with the field going 50.55% without that Browns cover. So obviously you can't take games away necessarily, but still some food for thought there for you as far as we look at what happened in week two of the Super Contest. Last week, the consensus, the most selected sides in each game came in at 9-7. The top five consensus, 3-2. So those were the five most popular picks. Obviously, the Browns being one of those. And again, taken by the highest number of entrants ever and the highest percentage of the field ever as well. For the season here, the consensus now 14-18 and the top five consensus 6-4 thus far. If we look over at the Super Contest Gold, and again, we'll update that here on a weekly basis, not just on the segment, but also in the recap article every Tuesday over at bangthebook.com. The gold field came in at 58.62% in week two. Once again, the Browns very popular. 71 of 117 took the Browns in the Super Contest gold. However, the gold field, 53%. If you take out that Browns game, just go with the other 15 games. So once again, kind of getting back to what we expected to see with the differences between the traditional Super Contest and the Super Contest gold, you know, 2.5 to 3% on a weekly basis. You would expect to see the gold do, you know, a little bit better than the traditional. That's what we saw here this past weekend. Also, as I mentioned, we're in the Circa Million. Does have some different lines. compared to what the Super Contest has. I actually don't have that list here prepared for today's recording, but I can tell you that in the Circa Million, our Bang the Book Dash 1 entry is 6-3-1, and my Bang the Book Dash 2 entry, 3-6-1. And by the way, Kirk Cousins can go find a rusty pitchfork and fornicate himself with that after that absolutely atrocious interception that wound up costing Minnesota not just a win, but also the cover, because there's a chance that they would have kicked a field goal there, turn a two-score game or a touchdown game into a one-score game, make it 21-19. Instead, throws that awful pick. Vikings don't come close to covering the number, when they get the ball back. So, in any event, that's kind of the way that the cookie crumbled last week in the Circa Million. But, you know, as we look at this week's NFL card, it's hard, you know, and that goes without saying. And certainly we talked about this on Bang the Book Radio yesterday, and also we've talked about it throughout the week here. But, I mean, look, you know, when it comes to the Super Contest, you can't play the Thursday night game. I mean, you can, but it's very hard to do because you have to have all five of your picks ready to go. So you have to be very clear on what's going on in terms of the injury situations for these teams. And also, you may lose some line value. You may lose some equity because, as we always talk about here, these Super Contest lines don't move. They come out on Wednesday night, and they do not move. They do not adjust to what the market has. It was what we saw last week with the Browns and why they were taken by so many entrants, because they went from a 2.5 to a 6.5-point favorite with the Sam Darnold news. At 2.5, you know, I don't know if the Browns are a consensus pick. I would say probably not. But because of the line adjustment there, you wind up with 4 points hovering around key numbers as well. You know, the Browns taken by a very large percentage of the field. So those things happen here in the Super Contest, and you may get, you know, some Thursday practice injuries. You may get some Friday practice injuries. And if you lock in on that Thursday night game, well, you're SOL if some of those things happen. You know, let's say that you lock in on that Thursday night game and all of a sudden you find out that, you know, Aaron Rodgers got hurt in practice on Friday. Well, if you already took the Packers, you've got them at 7.5. When the market probably adjusts that game to, you know, Packers -1 or Packers pick 'em, something like that. So there's a lot of risk involved in taking that Thursday night game. You have to be very, very confident that that's what you want to take. So you scratch the Thursday game, and when you look specifically at this week, think of all the backup quarterback situations we have. Think of all the skill position injuries that we have. We've got two games with spreads above 3 touchdowns. So it's very hard this week to come up with 5 plays that you actually like. And especially when you consider that a lot of these games hovering around key numbers, you know, you got the Cardinals -3. Well, I don't know what I'm going to get from Kyle Allen. I don't know what I'm going to get from Kyler Murray. Seahawks and Saints, Teddy Bridgewater, +4 is the line there in that one with the Saints a dog. Texans and Chargers, a 3-point line. I don't know what these two teams are right now. Chargers, a lot of cluster injuries in the secondary. You know, are the Texans able to take advantage with Deshaun Watson? Yeah, they certainly could. But how good are the Texans? You know, is Whitey Merciless going to be that player that can replace Jadeveon Clowney over the long haul this season? You know, will the Texans be able to get that pass rush going against Phillip Rivers and this Chargers offensive line? A lot of questions in that game. Rams and Browns, questions in that game. Bears and Redskins, you know, no real injury notes in that game. But still, what are those two teams? So I think this was a very challenging week, to say the least. I did the best I could coming up with some picks and some leans here. And once again, I will throw this out there that, you know, our picks aren't due until Friday night for the Golden Nugget, Saturday morning for both the Super Contest and the Circa Million. And I record this on Thursday evening so that I can have the show squared away, put together after recording this segment with Brent. So, you know, I mean, again, these lines aren't going to move for the Super Contest. So my thought process may change a little bit. Maybe I uncover something or read something that, you know, kind of changes my opinion about a game, something like that. But again, like I've always talked about here on the show, if it's a play that I like, unless it's some sort of dramatic injury that significantly alters the line, I'm not going to go and play the other side here after talking about the side that I liked on the segment. So you take some solace in that. Again, you know, the plays I talk about here may not make it onto my card. You know, if I have my full 5-play card pretty much squared away, I still may change something. So just want to throw that out here before I start breaking down some of these games for week 3 in the Westgate Super Contest. So We go ahead and start here with rotation number 6 on the Super Contest card. That is the Detroit Lions. They are +6 on the road against the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, again, injuries playing such a big role here this week in the NFL. I mean, they play a big role every week, but it certainly feels like early on in the season here, the number of, you know, household name injuries is a very big deal here for a lot of these teams. And look, Detroit comes in a lot healthier for this game than Philadelphia. The Eagles canceling practice on Wednesday because of all the injuries. That's a rarity here in the NFL. The secondary is banged up. The receiving corps, it's in shambles. You know, no DeSean Jackson, no Alshon Jeffrey this week, in all likelihood for Philadelphia. And they really struggled to move the football against Atlanta. Now, I did have the Eagles last week in that game. You know, probably came a half yard short from winning that one, or obviously a 4th-and-3 stop of Julio Jones short of winning that game. But that wasn't the right side in that game. And it was a difficult loss, to say the least. But they weren't the right side. You know, they only had, what, 140 yards of offense or something like that early on in the fourth quarter. They were really struggling to move the football. And that's just it. You know, the Eagles have a lot of weapons. There's no doubt about that. But as these injuries mount, especially at wide receiver, start taking away guys from Carson Wentz. You start taking away guys that can create separation and give Wentz that window to throw into. You know, that's one of the reasons why guys are backups. In a lot of cases, these guys are just as fast as the players that start, but they don't get that separation. They're not as good of route runners. And when things like that happen, you get turnovers. You get incompletions. You get behind the chains. So for the Eagles here, I think it's very challenging for them, given their injury situation to date, to get a lot of margin in this game, to blow the Lions out, you know, beat them by a touchdown or more. I think it's a pretty challenging thing to do. Now, also, this is a secondary factor, maybe even a tertiary factor here, but the Eagles do play the Packers on a short week next Thursday. And with all of their injury considerations already, I think they're perfectly fine to win and get out. I think they don't care if they win this game by 2, by 3, by 4, by 6. I don't think it matters to them, so long as they're able to pick up this win. And that's a different kind of mindset for a team. You know, anytime you put that level of complacency into the equation, makes it hard for you to go out there and blow out an opponent. So I think Detroit is pretty live here. Again, Philadelphia, only 5 yards per play so far on the season. And with Doug Peterson, with Carson Wentz, with all those offensive skill guys, 5 yards per play is a very disappointing output so far for Philadelphia. Look, the Lions, they'll give up some big plays now and then, but they are 4th in completion percentage against so far. So again, that conversation about will the Eagles create separation? You know, the Lions, they don't have a premier pass rush or anything like that, but they do have a pretty underrated secondary. They've got some guys back there that can really play. You'd like to think that, you know, this Matt Patricia defense would keep improving a little bit. The Lions do struggle to stop the run, but the Eagles don't run the football all that effectively. We'll see if they try to force feed that a little bit here in this game. But again, when you run the ball, makes it hard to create some margin. If Matt Stafford has time to throw, and he probably should, given how that Eagles pass rush has looked so far, the Philadelphia secondary is allowing yards in chunks. I think Detroit can move the ball. I think that they're certainly the much healthier team coming into this game. I think they're pretty live here in this one. So look at the Lions +6 this week in the Westgate Super Contest. Second play here of the ones that I like, the Oakland Raiders. They're +8.5. They are number 14 in the Super Contest rotation order. And I've been fairly impressed here so far this season with the Raiders. Picked up that win in week 1 over Denver. They jumped out to a 2-0 lead, or 10-0 lead, excuse me, last week in week 2 before Patrick Mahomes just took the game over. And that's going to happen. And I understand that, you know, perception of Oakland is down a little bit here because they got those 10 early points on a pretty lackluster Chiefs defense and then didn't do anything else. But still, I think the early game plans for John Gruden and his coaching staff have been really, really strong. I would expect a good start here for the Raiders, even though, you know, they've got that early kickoff and they've got the long travel to the Twin Cities after back-to-back home games. I would expect them to start strong here. And again, we talked about this concept, I believe, on Wednesday this week on Bang the Book Radio, where The Raiders are starting a long road trip. They do have a home game, quote unquote, in London, but they're starting a long road trip. And a lot of times it's a good situational spot to bet on teams in other sports because they want to put that best foot forward. It's as fresh as they're going to be with all of these road games, or you know, at least away games in succession here. So I think we get a good effort from Oakland in this game here this week. Like I mentioned, Patty Mahomes took over last week. Kirk Cousins won't do that. And it's a lot harder to get margin running the football. And I think after Kirk Cousins made some of the decisions that he made in that game last week, I think Mike Zimmer wants to run the football more in this game. I think he wants to build off of the success that Dalvin Cook had last week. And that runs the clock, and it makes it hard for you to keep gaining margin because, again, you're getting yards, you know, maybe three or four, you're getting, you know, gains 3 or 4 yards at a time. So I think that helps Oakland a little bit here. Oakland has also defended the run pretty well so far. I think Gruden's going to expect a lot of running of the football. And certainly, you know, he would like to make Kirk Cousins beat him. So I would anticipate flooding the box. I would anticipate run blitzes and things of that sort. And also, too, look, you know, I read a great recap. And once again, Ted Wynn, one of the best analysts out there for the NFL, he wrote a Raiders recap with the All-22 camera angle over at The Athletic here this week. And he was talking about how, you know, Paul Gunther against Kansas City changed things up. He tried to do whatever he could to slow down the Chiefs. And for a quarter or so, it worked. But the problem is that he worked a lot of new concepts, a lot of different looks into the equation here for the Raiders. And they had a lot of miscommunications. A lot of guys were running free. I think you get back to, you know, what you do best in a game like this against the Vikings. I think it's a more simplistic playbook, a lot more base packages, things that aren't going to confuse the defense, things that aren't going to leave guys just out there in space with nobody around. I think that they have a much better game plan here this week for this game against the Vikings. Gunther knows Mike Zimmer. They were together when Zimmer was the DC in Cincinnati and Gunther was one of the assistants. So there's some familiarity there. He has an idea of what Zimmer wants his identity to be, you know, both as a head coach and also with the defense. You know, the Vikings do have a good defense, but you've got intimate knowledge here of what Zimmer likes to do schematically with Paul Gunther. I think Gruden is the right type of guy to take advantage of that. Also, some situational angles here in this one. The Vikings are in a division sandwich. They played the Packers last week. They play the Bears next week. It's a tough spot here. You know, you're not thinking about winning by a big number. You're thinking about winning and staying healthy and getting out so that you can beat those division opponents. The Raiders are still trying hard. John Gruden will have them prepared. So the Raiders, number 14 in the Super Contest here this week, +8.5 against the Minnesota Vikings. You know, when you look around at the NFL here this week, again, so many injury considerations, lots of different things for you to try and factor into the equation. And the rest of this Super Contest segment here is brought to you by the Trends app, T-R-N-D-S. You know, again, so many injuries here this week. So you're looking for as much information as you can possibly find, and maybe historical trends are the way that you want to look. You know, it can be difficult and time-consuming and a challenge to find a lot of this information, to find the right resources that are out there to see how teams do coming off of a loss, how teams do head-to-head against a certain opponent, how they do in cold weather or with long travel, much like we just talked about there in that game with the Oakland Raiders. You know, after a bye week, bye weeks start in week four with the Jets and 49ers. So how do teams do with that extra prep time? The nice thing is the Trends app, only available on iOS right now, simplifies access to powerful data, allowing users to quickly self-source and share meaningful sports betting trends, all from the convenience of your own phone. You can identify new betting angles based on a variety of available filters. You know, you don't have to go through and do extensive box score study or, you know, hope that somebody tweets about these things, something like that. You don't have to just consume stats. You can go out there and find your own using this Trends app. Now, the Trends app is available for free on the App Store for iOS users. However, there is a premium subscription tier as well. And the folks over at Trends are giving away 100 to the first 100 users who sign up access to that premium subscription tier. Here's how you can enter for that. You tweet at Bang the Book and at Trends underscore sports. That's TRNDS underscore sports. And include a quick note as to why you think this Trends app and this tool would be helpful to you. The other option is you can visit the website over at www.trends-sports.com/bangthebook. Again, that's TRNDS-sports.com/bangthebook to sign up. And again, the first 100 users who use that URL to sign up will get a free month of the premium subscription tier. So again, you look for all of the possible angles that you can find in such a tight and efficient NFL market, and the app and the website belonging to Trends, once again, TRNDS, is a perfect fit for you here as you look at week 3 of the NFL season and beyond. So we take a look here at the rest of my Super Contest thoughts for week 3. And, you know, once again, it's tough, man. You got to scrape the bottom of the barrel a little bit here. And number 20, the New York Giants, +6.5, look like they're going to make it onto my card this week. You know, when you look at Tampa Bay here so far this season, it has not been impressive. You know, they didn't play particularly well in week 1 against the 49ers. Winston had some pick sixes in there, and that was kind of the narrative. You know, well, if Winston doesn't do that, or, you know, well, we're used to Winston throwing the interceptions, but they weren't moving the football all that effectively anyway. 4.7 yards per play in 2 games. You look back at last Thursday, and yes, Tampa Bay does have extra prep time, so something you can check out in the Trends app, you know, see how teams do with some extra rest there. Look, they beat Carolina last week, and Cam Newton seemed to have gotten hurt late in the first quarter. You know, the Panthers had 2 possessions. They had 104 yards to that point. They had turned it over on downs in the one possession, and they had a field goal on another. But, you know, the Panthers were 3-for-14 on third down last week, 0-for-3 on fourth down. So they turned it over on downs 3 times. It just wasn't a Carolina-esque performance, and especially with Cam Newton being banged up. So I think what that win for the Buccaneers signals is more about where Carolina is right now than where Tampa Bay is. The Bucs 2-for-12 on third down last week, 7-for-23 on the season. And I get it. You know, the Giants have not played well in 2 games. They got carved up by Kellen Moore and Dak Prescott and that new look Dallas offense in week 1. And like I talked about, I think last week when I was looking at, you know, maybe taking Dallas in the Super Contest, the Giants just didn't read things properly. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of film study. There wasn't a whole lot to know about Kellen Moore's offense. Now, I will grant you that they didn't play very well against the Bills offense last week either, but they were only outgained by 18 yards, only outgained 5.8 to 5.6 yards per play. So, you know, the offense wasn't awful. It wasn't as efficient as it could have been, but it wasn't awful. The defense, you know, maybe they didn't play particularly well, but now you've got the new frontier with Daniel Jones, and everyone's going to individually elevate his play to try and help this team out. You know, I think that Daniel Jones can make some throws that Eli couldn't. I think Daniel Jones can keep this team on the field with some third down completions. I think you get more Saquon Barkley in this game, which, I mean, that can't hurt. He's the best player on the field for either team. You can make a case for Mike Evans, I guess. But Saquon Barkley is probably the best player on the field for either team. And with Jones, he's going to get more touches, whether it's in the running game or out of the backfield in the receiving game. So I think there's a lot of opportunity here for the Giants to move the football more effectively this week with Jones as opposed to Manning. And again, you know, maybe there's just a different vibe here to this Giants team, because this was a cloud hanging over them from the second that Daniel Jones was picked. It was kind of a question of, when does this change happen? When does this officially take hold? Well, it takes hold in week 3. So now there's no uncertainty. Now it's Daniel Jones is our guy unless he gets hurt. And I think that that helps the team overall. It kind of streamlines everything. It sort of takes that distraction out of everybody's mind. And I don't think the Buccaneers are a really polished product. You know, Bruce Arians has improved this defense to a degree, but Jameis Winston still has accuracy issues. I don't think this Byron Leftwich offense is all that explosive. They've basically neutered Mike Evans at this point in time. We know Tampa Bay is not a particularly good team running the football. there are a lot of things going against the Buccaneers here in this spot. And I understand that they're a 6.5-point favorite, and maybe they are for a reason, but you know, I think that there's some pyrite, some fool's gold to that win over Carolina last week. I think that maybe people looked at San Francisco's win over Cincinnati and said, okay, well, that's not that bad of a loss anymore. Maybe it's not, but the Buccaneers still have not played well, offensively anyway, in their first two games of the season here. I think they're going to have to score some points to you know, cover this number. I don't know if that's going to be the case here. And also here for Daniel Jones, one last note on this game. The Bucs are tied for 26th in quarterback hits through two games so far. So Daniel Jones should have time to throw the football. And obviously you have to be very careful blitzing the Giants, because if you blitz and you guess wrong and it's a handoff to Saquon Barkley, it's going the other way in a hurry. So that should stem the pass rush a little bit. Give Jones time to throw. Give him some windows to look into. So like the Giants here, number 20 in the Super Contest rotation order, plus the 6.5. So the three games I very much expect to be on my card for this week: Lions plus 6, Raiders plus 8.5, Giants plus 6.5. So once again here, one of the hardest parts about the Super Contest, you've got to pick five games. Even if you don't like five, you've got to find five. So here's my list of leans with other games that I'm considering here for this week. And we start with number 11, the Indianapolis Colts. And Indianapolis has been good to me. 2-0 against the spread here in the Super Contest so far with the Colts. One game where they covered the number by a half point. Another game last week where they won outright as a field goal underdog against Tennessee. And, you know, I understand why the line is moving down here on the Colts. You know, now they're back at home. Brissett really hasn't put up the numbers that you would expect in a Frank Reich offense, but that's not necessarily his fault either, because they've run the football quite a bit and they've had a lot of success running the football. So, you know, I know everyone is very anti-run here in the current state of the NFL, and I can't blame anybody for that. But if you're running the football effectively, run the football. You know, if you're able to get 5 yards a carry or 5.5 yards a carry, like Indianapolis has for the most part this season, go ahead and run the football. So their ground game has been very, very good. And I think ultimately, in due time, that will open up some more opportunities for Jacoby Brissett. Brissett's not going to throw too many deep balls anyway, but he can get some chunk plays getting out in space. Safeties cheating up to stop the run. Linebackers, you know, kind of doing the same thing there. I think the Colts can be very creative with this offense that they have. And there aren't many head coaches more creative than Frank Reich right now. So I think that could be a good thing for the Colts as they go forward. Kind of a shortish week for the Falcons here as well. You know, they come off of that win on Sunday Night Football against Philadelphia. Monday is a completely lost day with the late start. You get back into it on Tuesday. Then you got to travel up to Indianapolis on Saturday. So a little bit of a shorter week here for the Falcons in this one. I do think that both teams probably have some success moving the football. I do believe that the Falcons, as I mentioned earlier, did hold Philly in check a little bit more than the final score would indicate. But still, I'm not completely sold on Matt Ryan and, you know, having Dirk Cotter back. I mean, look, Julio Jones made a play for him in the fourth quarter last week. Otherwise, they lose that football game. And the Colts are making a lot of plays. The defense is better than it has shown here so far. I think that they're still kind of working through some things in the back seven. But again, the Colts on my short list of leans here, minus 1.5 hosting the Falcons. Number 27, the San Francisco 49ers are a 6.5-point favorite against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And my starting point on this game was to say, this feels like an overreaction. It feels like an overadjustment to Ben Roethlisberger being out. Going to Mason Rudolph, who, you know, didn't play bad last week at all. It was the bad interception off the hands of Dante Moncrief that really changed that game, really turned around the complexion of that game. But one of the things that is very successful in the NFL, and this isn't a trend or anything like that, it's just kind of something that generally tends to work out, contrarian favorites do pretty well. And I think that the 49ers will be a contrarian favorite, because people are going to look at them and say, well, they beat the Buccaneers, who suck, and they beat the Bengals, who really suck. And maybe that is the case. But the 49ers have a very good pass rush now. They've focused primarily on the defensive line over the last 3 or 4 years in the draft. They can get after the quarterback. And if you can get after a guy like Mason Rudolph, who was a little bit indecisive at times last week and hasn't really played a whole lot, That's only going to help your cause on the defensive side. You know, will anybody other than Juju Smith-Schuster get separation? And even if they do, can Rudolph get rid of it before the pass rush gets there? But really the biggest reason I like the 49ers here in this spot, Kyle Shanahan is a master play designer. He is a great play caller. And if you look at the similarities with the Pittsburgh defense here in the first two games of the season against the Patriots and the Seahawks, they're lost back there. They don't have a captain of this defense. They don't have somebody in the middle of this defense who can relay the plays from the sideline to the rest of the players. They've gotten lost in coverage. They gave up 300 passing yards to Russell Wilson last week. We know Brady carved them up in week one. Their defensive woes stand out a lot more to me than their shortcomings on the offensive side. I think Kyle Shanahan will take some pages from that New England playbook in week one. You've got a long trip out west for Pittsburgh. And furthermore, Pittsburgh is in a state of flux. You already have those questions of, will Ben Roethlisberger be back at all? Will he come back next season and give this another shot? Because Mason Rudolph is not the long-term answer. And I know that Pittsburgh just picked up Minka Fitzpatrick, obviously a sign that they're not throwing away this season by any means. But this is a much more flawed team than I originally thought and than a lot of people originally thought. I think the 49ers could get a pretty signature win here. I think they can get after Mason Rudolph, who, by the way, you're one hit away from Devlin Hodges becoming the quarterback for the Steelers. So you think it was bad last week with Ben going out. Just think if they got a kid who's never really played at the NFL level before trying to stare down that 49ers pass rush. I think the 49ers are riding high. I think that this is the start that they expected to get off to. I think Garoppolo only gets better as he's able to shake off the rust. And he was very, very good last week. So number 27, the San Francisco 49ers, 6.5-point favorite. I think a contrarian favorite in San Francisco may make the card here this week. Next up on the board, number 29, the Los Angeles Rams. They're a 3-point road favorite on Sunday Night Football against the Cleveland Browns. The Browns have been a mess. Even against the Jets, they didn't play particularly well. Baker's missing throws. You know, the pass rush has been phenomenal for Cleveland. And that is what gives me pause here in this game, is that that pass rush can completely change a game. But when you look at the Browns here otherwise, Nick Chubb, very hit or miss. The two big plays from Odell Beckham in that Monday Night Football game, the one-handed catch and the catch and run, that was the majority of Cleveland's offense. Now they don't have David Njoku, so they miss another weapon. Baker's just not playing up to par. And if you look on the defensive side for the Browns, Christian Kirksey is an enormous loss for that defense. You know, one of the reasons that eventually settled on the Browns along with the line value is that C.J. Mosley was out for the Jets last week. Christian Kirksey plays a similar type of role for this Cleveland defense. And again, I just mentioned, you know, they do have Joe Schobert, but I just mentioned how the Steelers don't have that captain, that guy to relay play calls. You know, will the Browns have that guy without Kirksey? Will it have to be Schobert? You know, they didn't have Demarius Randle last week either. They've got some injury concerns in the back seven that obviously you worry about here against the Rams team. I get it. Jared Goff is bad on the road. He's much better at home. He's bad on the road. It's been talked about a ton. It's probably baked into this line even. But there's more continuity on the Rams side with Sean McVay, with Wade Phillips. This is a big boy spot for the Cleveland Browns. Spotlight is on you. Sunday Night Football. Liquored up, excited crowd. I think they fall short. I don't think they're there yet. I don't think Baker Mayfield is there yet. And once again, interception problems have been plaguing him throughout the course of his young career. You give the Rams extra possessions, you're really going to be up against it here in this game. So number 29, the Los Angeles Rams -3. One more lean for me here on the card. Then I got one more for you here. And again, maybe a contrarian favorite in this one. Number 31, the Chicago Bears were a 4-point favorite. Now I mentioned liking Washington a little bit on Thursday's edition of the show, but as I dug deeper, I don't like Washington and I may even like Chicago here. Mitch Trubisky gets a big respite this week. Goes from the Packers, who look like they're going to be much improved on defense under Mike Pettine, and the Broncos. The Broncos have not gotten to the quarterback, but they defend well. They scare you. They scare you into getting rid of the football early. Trubisky now takes on Washington. No pass rush and can't stop the run. This is a good chance for a get-right type of game for this Bears offense. Look, Washington has moved the football this year, but they've moved it against the bad Philadelphia secondary that I mentioned earlier and a Dallas defense that knew that they could score whenever they wanted to in last week's game. So I guess it's a big step up in class here for this Washington defense. I guess it's a good opportunity for the Chicago defense and a good opportunity for Matt Nagy to get Mitch Trubisky right in this game. Now, one of the things I don't like about this game, and I'll have to weigh the importance of this, is that this is a look-ahead spot for Chicago. They play on Monday Night Football, they come back home and host the Minnesota Vikings. Also, maybe the Chicago offense just isn't that good. Maybe Trubisky just isn't the guy. Maybe he is going to regress here this season. So I would say of the four leans I have, this is probably the lowest probability to make the card, but still I wanted to throw it out here for you. Take a look at the Chicago Bears -4. So once again here, my three very likely picks for the Super Contest, the Lions +6, the Raiders +8.5, and the Giants +6.5, with the Colts -1.5, 49ers -6.5, Rams -3, and Bears -4 as my set of leans here this week for the Super Contest. And make sure you check out our article on Saturday over at bangthebook.com with our official cards for week 3 of the Super Contest. And then also keep an eye out for our Circa Million preview as well with our official cards over in that contest. We got one more guest, one more segment here left for this week on Bang the Book Radio. Once again, as I mentioned, recorded that on Skype, so it will sound a little bit different, but hopefully I can streamline and smooth out the audio a little bit for you here in the editing process. But that last segment is with Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook. Again, recorded this on Thursday evening, so some of these lines may have moved around a little bit, but still lots of good insight on sharp money in both the college football and the NFL markets with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. All right, I'm joined now by Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook in Costa Rica for this week's version of the Odds Report. Brent, how's it going today, man?
Going all right. I mean, I'm sitting out looking out my window. We've got a bit of a tropical storm here, some thunder, some lightning, and I'm indoors talking to you, so I couldn't be better.
All right, buddy. Sounds good. We got a lot of stuff to get to here on today's show as well. And you know what? We'll go ahead and start Friday night right away. First game on the board, 305-306 here, Utah and USC. And we've talked all week about how interesting this game is, how interesting this handicap is. It's kind of nice that we have sharp action to start with this game on the segment here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not sometimes we go through a whole season where we don't get to talk about a Friday game, but we got one here, the early game, if you will, or not the early game, first game on my Don Best screen here with USC and Utah. You know, this is I like this spot just because Utah is where I got my count. It's a strong count, about 5-1 favoring Utah. I got sharp money on USC +4.5. The line market wide has gone down to 3.5, telling me that we're sitting on the right side with the sharp money and the public going against them. So I'm feeling good about this one right now. Like I said, we're sitting here +4.5 with sharp money. More money though on Utah based on the strong bet count, 5-1. Usually like around 2-1, 3-1, public versus sharp. I still kind of get my chart around balanced. So when I'm at 5-1, I'm still one side to the public money. So that's always, of course, a good spot to be.
So I guess here's my question about this game. I mean, you know, we kind of talk about how you classify the sharp bettors that are out there. Was this a numbers play getting the 4.5, or does this look like it's, you know, probably a pretty true position liking USC?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this is obviously a big game in the Pac-12. Got to repeat that, Pac-12, Adam, with USC sitting there. I mean, they're 2-1 overall. You got Utah 3-0, and I think Utah is like ranked around top 10. I think they are right now. So this is obviously a big game from what I've seen. And again, it's just a matter of profiling your customers, right? There are certain guys who just go out there and grab numbers and boom, they go their way and play back the other side. You've got guys who do that as well. And there's other guys who are, you know, just sharp guys long-term who grab a side and just stick with it. And that's the case here with the +4.5 on USC.
All right, we're going to make a big old leap down the board here to one of the marquee games on the card. But before we do that, I just want to ask you about some of these games. Ohio State's a 39-point favorite. Clemson, a 41.5-point favorite. You know, you got some 4-touchdown games out there as well. How do you approach these games where, you know, you have some of these massive teams or some of these really, really bad teams? You just have huge numbers in the non-conference, and this is probably the last time that you'll have a lot of those since so many teams go into conference play. How do you approach just
across the board, the really big numbers in college football.
But the big numbers is just a matter of moving more aggressively when you need to. Really, I mean, like realistically speaking, anytime you get a, you know, above 10, even like in the NFL, anything above 10 beyond that, it's not a key number anymore. You know, you could make an argument, oh, you know, like 13 or 14 is, you know, a sharp number in the NFL. But nah, I mean, we don't hold off on stuff like that. You don't consider that really a key number. So it's just aggressive movement. And generally speaking, too, when you get numbers that high, you know, the public, yeah, they'll side with the, you know, with the big price sometimes, but they'll also take back prices. When they see a plus 38.5, they're like, wow, I mean, that's just like too much to pass up. Every now and then, as we talked about it in the past, every now and then, even though you get big numbers, sometimes you do get sharp money on it. So obviously you have to respect that and move, you know, very aggressively. So if you get sharp money at like a 37, it's not like you're going from 37 to 38. I mean, or 37.5, what's the point? You're going definitely jump up to 38 or 38.5. You got to move really aggressively on stuff like that. And generally, the public's not going to be as heavily involved, even though it's a marquee team.
Well, this is a marquee game. You're going to have public money, and you've got some sharp investment in this one as well. Game 343, 344, Michigan and Wisconsin, 11 a.m. local time kickoff, noon Eastern time kickoff. So not a whole lot of time for a massive handle on this game, but I'm sure it won't stop people from betting it.
Yeah, this will definitely be one of the, you know, the heavier bet games of the week. I mean, we talked about that USC game that's on Friday. That's going to be heavily bet, of course. This Wisconsin-Michigan game definitely will. Another, you know, big game out on the West, I guess, if you want to call it, is the Washington-BYU. That should be decent as well. That's got a decent spread and some decent teams as well. So we'll have a few games that get real good action. Unfortunately, we've got, you know, the other really good teams that are involved that are generally, you know, higher point spreads right now, like LSU is up around 24, I think it was. Florida is up around, they're over 14, stuff like that. So you get, you know, a few competitive games like this. This is definitely one of the, what you would call a marquee matchup. This number has moved slightly in terms of the spread from 2.5 up to 3.5 or 3 and juice, what's out there. The count basically is about 2-1 in Wisconsin. So I just got right now, from what I've seen, you know, in-house, just general public money betting the side right now, moving the Wisconsin number to, you know, I open at 3 and I'm at 3 and juice right now, but I know there are some 3.5 with dog juice out there. But I did get bet on the total of this one. I got sharp money on the under here. So under 46 is where it came here in house. I'm sitting at 44.5 right now. That's number pretty much market wide. I think 47 was the highest opener. Like I said, 46 is where I got bet here.
All right, so we move to that Washington and BYU game that you mentioned, game 349, 350. So sounds like you've got some pretty good action on this one, but also some sharp money too.
Yeah, I mean, already my wager count is good. My volume's on good games this game. So it's looking like it's going to be a good one in terms of, you know, for me sitting back as a risk manager, the more volume I have on a game generally, that, you know, and more interest that there is, the generally, you know, it's easier for me, not that it's easy at all, to balance action. Now, of course, you never balance as well on a game. You never get exactly, you know, even really close to the same amount of money on two sides. But, you know, you get what you call manageable numbers. This one here, it's another one where I got bet on Washington. They've got a road favorite here going to BYU. And I don't know, you're really, you know, they're not a bad side to be on if you're going to get, you know, quote unquote, stuck on a side. BYU already, I think they've gone on, I mean, they beat USC at home last week, I guess it was. They went on the road and beat Tennessee. Their loss early was the first game of the season versus Utah, who's, like I said, they're ranked number 10, I think. So, decent tough schedule for BYU so far. They are 2-1, so I have to, you know, sit here rooting for them. And I again, going against the sharps is not something a position you want to be on. I do have a count about 2-1 favoring Washington. I got sharp money at -5.5, so I you don't want to go to 7, but I could see this one going up to 7, just trying to get some money back on BYU, hopefully some sharp money. But I don't know, you can have a little bit of confidence, I guess, going with BYU, what they've done so far this season.
Sounds like one hell of a thunderstorm down there, man.
I told you.
In the background, yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, I got thunder, I got lightning, and I'm talking to you, so it's a, you know, a great day.
I will say, I mean, not to go way off track, I'm kind of a weather nerd, so, you know, it's kind of interesting. Don't make that sound.
Is that a thing?
It is a thing. Like, I'm telling you, I would love to spend a few weeks in the spring storm chasing in the Midwest and the Great Plains. I think that would be awesome. I'd be a huge fan of doing that.
Moving right along,
Okay, fine. We'll move past that, if you just want to crush my dreams and my hopes. We go to game 373-374 here. West Virginia and Kansas. Fascinating game, fascinating handicap. Lots of intrigue about this one.
Yeah, this one here, I mean, the number on the side has been pretty, you know, pretty stable. Open 4, sitting at 4.5 right now. So it's good two-way action on the spread here. I do have one-sided action on the total. Just sharp money so far coming in on that one at the under 54. So under 54 is what I got bet. This number did open as high as 55. And, you know, pretty much consensus out on the board right now is a 49. So that's a five-point move for the sharp money bet me so far. It's just trickles of public money going the same way as well. So I'm sitting at 54. If I don't get something back the other way, I'm going to probably gonna have to go, you know, even lower on this one, trying, you just kind of, you know, egg someone to tempt someone to bet the over on this one.
I gotta say, man, I mean, Kansas, you know, it's been a long time since they've been relevant. They pick up that big Friday night win last week against Boston College. I'll be kind of curious to see what happens with some of their prices as they go along, in particular if they win this game here this week. Then you really have to respect what they've done.
Yeah, no, that was that win last week was just massive, and obviously it was actually a game where on game day sharp action came in on them. So I was kind of waiting to see if, you know, this number I think is a respectable number at the 4, 4.5 where it is right now. It's one of those ones that you might want to watch just to see if it ticks back the other way, because if it does, I'm pretty sure it's going to be sharp money that moves that.
All right, so we jumped down a couple spots here on the board to some action. Game 377-378, Bowling Green and Kent State, and again, I wish we could always talk about Auburn, A&M, Oklahoma State, Texas, all those types of games. But as we've talked about before, sharps find value no matter what the game looks like, and they found some here.
Yeah, I've got sharp money on this one on the home favorite, Kent State, -9 is where that came in. Gone all the way up to 11.5 right now. This is one of those good spots to look for as well where you've got a sharp and public split. Now, I'm not going to try and convince you that I got massive public action on this game, Adam, but I do have a higher bet count on Bowling Green. So I've got twice as many bets on Bowling Green, sharp money on Kent State at -9, sitting at 11.5 right now. I did talk to some people about this game who kind of follow college football a little better than I do, a little more than I do. And the quote I wrote down about Bowling Green was horrible.
Yeah. That seems pretty accurate. I mean, again, we're talking about a Kent State.
Not my words, so.
We're talking about a Kent State team that, I mean, they've won a handful of games the last few years, and now all of a sudden they're laying double digits. And as somebody who went to Akron, Kent State's primary rival, those two teams play on homecoming in a few weeks here, and I'm kind of worried about what that line looks like for Akron, because it's pretty clear the Zips are one of the worst teams in the country. So them and Bowling Green, I mean, that's a real pillow fight whenever Akron and Bowling Green play. It's tough, right? I mean, some of these teams are just that bad. And sometimes too, you know, with a team like UMass, for example, not that there's any sharp action on that game, but it's almost like you can't set lines high enough because they've played that poorly.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the tough thing with college football, especially when, I mean, not talking about the, you know, marquee schools here, but you're talking about as a player, right? If you're one of the best players coming out, where are you going to go? Well, you're going to go to the best school, the school that, you know, has most people playing in the NFL and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of, if you trickle that down, even at the lower levels, you still get that discrepancy. I mean, if you got a choice of going to a middle school, if you want to call it, or lower level school, if you're good enough, you take the best opportunity for yourself. And it's one of those things that is really tough to change.
All right, so we go here to game 391-392, a marquee game in this one, so we do get to hit on at least a few of those here on this segment. Notre Dame and Georgia, and like I talked about on Thursday's show, you got a top 10 battle here with a 2-touchdown spread, and I have to think some people just think it's too high, but maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that, and again, that's part of the battle in that we come up with. Like I said before, we talk about, you know, before putting these numbers up, or even, you know, we see other books come up, we have our own handicappers that we talk to as well, and it's just like you want to put a number that you think is high enough, but not too high, of course. And again, the idea is that you want to get as much action on both sides of the teams. You're not really about predicting outcomes. I mean, you hear that all the time where, you know, a line comes out at, you know, like -14 and the team wins by 14. They say, oh, well, the bookmakers really had it right. Well, you know, we weren't really trying to predict the score. We were trying to balance action between two sides. This one here with Georgia, it seemed like a reasonable number in terms of opening up below 14. We opened at 13.5. And I got sharp money at, sorry, at 12 and a half. I got sharp money at 12 and a half. I think the lowest opening number out of the market was 11 and a half. So I already kind of got ahead of the game by opening at 12 and a half, got hit by sharp money at the 12 and a half. We're up to 14 and a half now. I mean, it's like, you know, you figure if Notre Dame money was going to be tempted at 14 and a half, that probably would have been the spot. I also, in terms of my bet count, I've got a wager count of 2-1 favoring Georgia as well. So, you know, it is a marquee game. It's a big game between two big schools. I mean, Notre Dame obviously has a great following, but I still have a count twice as many bets on Georgia and the sharp money on Georgia as well.
Once again, two household names here, primetime game, huge handle coming. What do you think? I mean, do we see 14 again with reasonable juice, or is 14 and a half probably where we are now?
Where I'm sitting right now, the only number where I've got my money balanced and my count kind of close to being balanced is at 14 and a half. But even there, my count still favors Georgia. Even at 14, it was almost 2-1 favoring Georgia. So it was nothing but Georgia money below 14.
All right. So I guess we're probably going to stay at 14 and a half here, and who knows, maybe even go higher on this marquee matchup in primetime. One more game to touch on here. This is a 3:30 Eastern kickoff in the ACC. Louisville and Florida State, game 393-394. And the sharp action's pretty obvious here regarding this game.
Yeah, and here's the other quote that I have written down was about Florida State, that they shouldn't be favored by this much over anybody. So sharp money came in on Louisville. That was at 8.5, plus 8.5 on Louisville. We're down to 6.5 right now. My count's pretty much even, so it's not, you know, it's not too bad in terms of my dollar position, although do I have almost twice as much money on Louisville, because of course the sharp money play a little bit more than your public guys, as generally speaking. So you know, Florida State's been just, you know, rough this year, and Louisville's kind of like one of those teams that I you know, I've been identified a couple times already by the sharps as a side to be with. It hasn't always worked out, but they've been picked on a couple times already, so that's something to look for maybe going forward. Plus 8.5, Louisville sharp money here. Count pretty much dead even.
All right, so before we start looking at some specific NFL games here, I do want to ask you about this. You and I were talking before we started recording here about how much of a mess the NFL is this weekend. Two spreads, over three touchdowns, bunch of backup quarterbacks, all that different type of thing. When you see a week like this in the NFL, and this may be as bad as it's been, but when you see a week in the NFL, maybe with bad games or a bunch of injuries, something like that, do you see the college handle increase to the point where people are just like, I don't want to bet the NFL, I'll just do more with college this week?
Yeah, no, I mean, the early action, you know, is been pretty much the same, and game day action is pretty much the same. You have to remember, too, there's so much action that comes in on game day, and even like on, you know, college football especially, it gets churned. Like, people will have a limited bankroll. They'll churn it through early games, they'll churn it through middle games, and they'll churn it through the late games, and then they'll play again on Sunday. So, no, the only thing that really affects volume, if the bettors have like a horrible day on Saturday or a great day on Saturday, that will affect volume more than anything else. You talk about NFL, I mean, all the changes in quarterbacks and this and that, it's been like, if you look back, say, to the start of the season or whatever, 3 weeks back, I mean, you've got, I mean, right now, I think Newton's in a walking boot. That's the latest thing. But I mean, you know, Andrew Luck retired. Foles broke his collarbone first game. Roethlisberger's done for the year. Breeze is gone for like 6+ weeks with his thumb. Darnold for the Jets comes up with mono. He gets replaced by Simeon, and he's done for the year as well. Now it's just like, it's just crazy. Like, I mean, we're looking at week three here, and those big stories. I mean, all these key quarterbacks.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, this isn't really a conversation for this segment necessarily, but I'll throw this out there anyway. There's already some discontent with the product here for the NFL, with all the officiating, the OPI, the DPI flags, the reviews, you know, and then you've also got all these injuries, and not just the quarterbacks, but some wide receivers. Guys like Tyreek Hill are already down, and I'm sure we'll lose more of them as we go along the way. AJ Green's still not playing. Who knows if he'll be back in week 4 or not. That's it. This may just be one of those years for the NFL where, I mean, the injury bug just may be devastating.
Yeah, I get evil looks around here when I say that the NFL stands for the No Fun League. And that's just really, I mean, watching some of these games, especially with the flags and stuff like that, it's just been no fun sometimes.
All right. So what is the Canadian Football League? What does the CFL stand for then?
Oh, hey. I think it's October 2nd, NHL.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No, I saw an NHL exhibition. We got that going already.
Yeah. Well, your team's the Canucks, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How are they going to do this year?
They're up and coming team. They're young and hungry.
Right. So am I. So we'll finish this segment here so I can get some food. All right. Look, let's go ahead and talk about the first game on the board here for Sunday. Game 461, 462, Denver and Green Bay. And not a real aesthetically pleasing game here, I don't think. And the sharp action may kind of agree with that standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, the sharp action will let the genie out of the bottle here. That under 43.5 is where the sharp money is. So, yeah, I guess we're looking at I think Green Bay's defense, too, is so we talked about, I think, week one, that I kind of had a feeling that sharps were looking out at Green Bay, hoping they kind of lost that week one game so they could get on them later. But that they obviously won that game, and so that's all shot. But Green Bay, I think, is one of those teams that kind of, you know, their defense is really, you know, a really lot better than it used to be. I think that's one of their strong suits now. The under 43.5 being played by sharps kind of maybe reinforces that, or could be comment on Denver's offense as well. Accounts pretty close on this game. In terms of the side itself, I'm sitting at, I'm kind of torn between sitting at 7 where I am right now, like 7 in juice, or going to 7.5 dog 15 or something like this. I just get the feeling that this number is going to go back up. I also have already seen that Green Bay is, you know, one of the most popular teaser sides for the week as well. So it's kind of one of those games where you look at, if you can kind of make a decision between going -7, -115 or whatever, or -7.5 dog 20 or dog 15, you want to be on 7.5, just kind of make people pay that extra point for the teasers.
Yeah. You know, I was on Minnesota last week in the Circa Million contest. And if you would have told me before the game that Green Bay would score on its first three possessions and then not score at all, I'd have been very happy with the spot I would have been in with Vikings +5 and +3, and it doesn't even matter. And that's a testament to that Packers defense. So, no, I agree with you. And again, we probably look at Green Bay as an under team. And, you know, if they have lower numbers, I would imagine that they'll probably be, for the most part, a play on team as well. Speaking of Minnesota, we moved down to game 471, 472, and it appears the Vikings were a play on team earlier this week.
Yeah, Minnesota's got sharp money here. You see this number's moved quite a bit. -7, -115 is where sharp money came in. We're sitting at -9 right now. That is Minnesota at home to Oakland. I guess the bubble may have burst already on Oakland after that opening week victory, where they beat Denver. And again, we just talked about Denver, who may have a rough long year. But sharp money on Minnesota -7, -115. Interestingly enough, at least in terms of the public perspective, my count is pretty, you know, it's pretty close. So that means I am getting support for Oakland from the public, which I kind of appreciate. But you also see that the fact the number still moved all the way up to 9 from the -7, -115 where the sharps came in. At the lower number as well, I think Minnesota is one of the top teaser teams as well. Even right now, if you're doing a 6.5-point teaser or a 7-point teaser, you're getting them to less than 3 points as a home teaser. So that's another team that, Green Bay is a popular teaser side, and Minnesota is already as well.
Well, as somebody who mentioned Oakland in the previous segment regarding the Super Contest, I'm a little bit concerned to hear that, you know, Minnesota, the sharp side early, Oakland kind of the public side. Do you think this line comes back down a little bit? Do you feel like somebody out there is waiting to take Oakland?
No. How's that for a short answer? No, I mean, my count is pretty much even. So it's, you know, it is one of those spots where I could continue to get Oakland money or at least get two-way action. Like I said, right now I do have two-way action, so I'm in a decent spot that Oakland is getting support. And again, once you get up over like 7.5, around, you know, sitting around 8, it's a decent spot where you can get money back or get two-way action after that. So pretty much after the 7, just let me pull this one up again. I think pretty much after the 7 bets, it's been a decent two-way action on this one. It's not bad. So I think it's going to hang around where it is. If it ticks down like down to 8, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all, but I think it's going to hang steady between 8 and 9 for sure.
But that would have to be sharp action to bump it back to 8, right? The public wouldn't do it.
No, the public pretty much wouldn't do it, I don't think. Again, the sharp money did come in at -7. So if you got overwhelmed with public money, yeah, you could tick down maybe a half point or so, but you pretty much want to hold your position with the sharps long term.
All right, so we go to game 475, 476, and I talked about in the college segment previously how it's very hard to find a number where people will bet on UMass. It's probably impossible to find a number where people will bet on Miami in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's tough. I mean, you know, you talk about all the stuff that we did in week one about all the off-field stuff with Miami as well. You know, the trading of Tunsil, that didn't go over well, of course. You know, there was all the reports of them quote unquote tanking this season and stuff like that. I mean, they just offensively they just don't have any real weapons. Rosen, I think, is going in quarterback this week, replacing Fitzpatrick, who had no magic this season. And it's just a bad spot. It's, you know, their offensive line is just like replacement level as well. And you got Dallas team that's just rolling over, you know, rolling offensively. The new offensive coordinator, I mean, you look at how Prescott throws the ball now and the receivers he has with Cobb and everything. And they seem to be a really, really deep team. You saw a lot last week with, you know, Miami catching the big points versus New England last week. It just simply didn't matter. Now they're on the road versus Dallas, and Dallas is a 23-point favorite now. I'm in a bad spot in that I got sharp money on Dallas, the opening number, which was minus 17. Of course, public-wise, you're just not going to get a whole lot of support for Dallas at all. I've got a count of about 3-1, 2.5, 3-1 favoring the Cowboys as well. So I got public money all over the Cowboys, and I got the sharp early money on them as well.
And the thing of it, too, is that, you know, you look at Miami, and I mean, as this thing continues to go along, as more guys want trades, unless Josh Rosen looks pretty good this week, and I'm sure Dolphins fans and you guys there at the books are really hoping that happens. I mean, I don't know what you do on a weekly basis with this team. You know, it's just they're so hard to power rate because not only is it a question of talent, it's also a question of motivation every week.
Yeah, and it's tough, too. I mean, you look at the quarterback, the spot that he's in. I mean, how good can he look? I mean, if the Dolphins are saying, look, I want to see what I have in this quarterback, and he's got basically no offensive line and no one to throw to, well, how is he going to look? So it's just, I mean, their offensive line is anemic, so they can't run, they can't protect, and they basically don't really have any weapons.
I mean, this is crazy, right? You've been doing this for a long time. It's week three, and we have two games with lines over three touchdowns. It's astonishing.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I could be wrong, but from my recollection, I don't think I've ever had two correlated games in the NFL in the same week.
And as we look at Miami here, was there any difference between Rosen and Fitzpatrick or no?
No.
In terms of adjustment to the line?
Yeah, no. Nothing? No, I mean, it's the thing is, yes, I mean, Fitzpatrick was pretty much a disaster. And you kind of look as like, well, you know, could Rosen be worse? You know, probably not. So, I mean, but there's no, it's just the rest of the team. There's just not enough people around to help the guy.
All right. So we move here to game 477, 478, another new quarterback in this one. That is Daniel Jones going for the Giants, getting the start over Eli Manning. And I guess it's the end of the Manning era, at least as long as Jones stays healthy there for the Giants. What are you seeing from this game, Brent?
Yeah, this, I mean, talk about whether you adjust for, you know, Rosen or Fitzpatrick. This is one of those games and, you know, with all due respect to Eli Manning, you pretty much give a slight upgrade to the Giants with Jones in there. I mean, Manning didn't look good at all. Jones showed, at least in the preseason, yes, it was preseason and mop-up duty, you know, facing second stringer sometimes and stuff like that. But I mean, he looked good. And the thing, too, is it's not just, you know, how he is on the field, it changes the attitude. You talk about the perception about the Dolphins and just kind of like even the players in the team are like, okay, we're tanking. This is going to be a brutal year. We're not going to win a single game. Whereas you got the Giants where at least as a player, you're saying, okay, you know, they're making a change. They're looking to the future. They're giving the young guy a shot. You know, let's go out and there do something for him. So I think you get a different attitude there. In terms of the actual results on the field, you know, we'll see. What I've seen so far in terms of sharp money is that so far I got Tampa Bay money that is sharp, and I've got public money backing them as well. So it could be a case where Giants just up and down are just not that good. I question how good they are defensively as well. We got a total here of 47.5 from the opener of, well, my opener was 48.5, and we're down to 47.5. So the number has ticked down, but still that's a pretty high total. Sharp money on Tampa Bay was -5. This number has gone up to 6.5 and 6. I think it's going to continue to bounce between 6.5 and 6. If it touched 7, wouldn't be surprised, but I'd probably get some, you know, some buyback at +7 there on the Giants. But I would look for this number to hang between 6 and 6.5. My count right now is about 2-1 favoring Tampa Bay. So public and sharp money on the Bucks.
No sharp action here until Monday night, but I do want to ask you about the rest of the Sunday card quickly. Carolina, no Cam Newton. New Orleans, no Drew Brees. Pittsburgh, no Ben Roethlisberger. What do you think the adjustments are to the point spread for those three big-name quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, it's you got kind of have to look at what teams are doing as well. I mean, the Saints, for example, it sounds like this week they're going to go a little bit more of Bridgewater, and I guess Hill is the name. He's going to be out there as well, quarterback a lot more. You saw, from Rudolph, at least we have like a bit of a sample size with him in terms of Pittsburgh and stuff like that. And obviously it's tough because you got to look at guys. You're talking about guys who generally haven't carried the ball before in terms of carrying the load, and they're out there for the first time, really. So you have to be kind of, cautious, I guess, with it. Obviously, the drop down from Breeze is kind of a big one. We saw, when we saw him last week, and Roethlisberger as well. But it's kind of, we've got our power rating numbers, we've got adjustment numbers, and we also use like the look ahead numbers as well, right? You're talking about look ahead numbers from previous weeks, and you kind of adjust based on what's happened on the field. So it's a whole lot of, up and down with the abacus, throwing it out there and see what the sharp Republic guys do with it.
All right, so we go to Monday Night Football here. Final game of the week. Chase game for some people, obviously. The Bears and the Redskins. Game 489-490. What's the early activity look like on this game?
Yeah, you're saying a chase game. And the one thing with the Sunday night and Monday night games is people do... Everyone watches those games, so pretty much everyone bets those games. We talk about how heavily gambling impacts the NFL, and these games are, clear examples of it just because our handle is just massive. It's not like, everyone suddenly found value on those games. No, everyone's watching them, so everyone bets them. I like our spot here in that we do have sharp money on this game. You've seen the number drop down to, 4 or 3.5 out there. I did get sharp money on Washington, the home dog, when the line went ticked up to 4.5. So +4.5 is where I have sharp money. I kind of expected public money on the Bears, and I have seen that so far. Not a massive count because it's the Monday night game that far in advance, but the count still is about 2-1 favoring the Bears. So the early look here is I'm going to end up with a sharp and public split. Obviously, Monday night and Sunday night get more public action than any single game, so I'm expecting more public money to come in on the Bears. I can probably hang around 4, maybe 4.15. If the entire market goes 3.5, I'll go with them, of course, but I'm looking at a position right now where I got hit at, +4.5. I think I can probably hang +4 and balance my action there, or even start needing the Redskins come Monday night.
Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, talking about sharp action here for us this week in college football and the NFL, and laughing at the fact that I enjoy severe weather and that I'm a little bit of a weather nerd. Brent, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you again next week.
Have a fantastic weekend, Adam. Thanks for calling.
All right, there you go. There was this week's version of the Odds Report. Once again, Brent, the head risk manager down there at DSI Sportsbook. Always interesting to get that perspective from the other side of the counter and find out about what's going on there with the sharp money in the marketplace. Coming up after the weekend here on Monday, we'll have our week 5. Can't believe it's week 5. Week 5 college football first look with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend. Good luck with everything this weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.